very
Light up your night with the Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
This is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about...
Welcome to A Global Focus with guest Chris Hawley, writer, researcher, and creator of the website, Chris Hawley's Paranormal World. Welcome, everyone, to A Global Focus. Tree Sheridan speaking. This week's program features guest Chris Hawley, A Global Focus with website A Global Focus. com, airs live on the Paranormal Radio Network with anchor station UPRN 105.7 FM New Orleans. The several listening venues can be accessed at UFOParanormalRadio.com. Thanks to Joe Montaldo, the Paranormal Radio Network owner, for making these broadcasts possible. And in advance, wishing all our listeners a great St. Patrick's Day tomorrow. And this week's program features Chris Hawley, writer, researcher on paranormal and contemporary topics, and creator of Chris Hawley's Paranormal World website. Chris reports her research findings and experiences through true accounts, memorable for their interesting format and insightful content. Chris not only details her own experiences, but also those of her readers from the United States and across the globe. These individuals can relate their experiences to Chris without fear of revealing their identity. Chris takes pride in maintaining the privacy of her sources. Chris frequently appears as guest on radio and internet programs to discuss the latest developments in her field. And at this time, Chris is writing two books projected to be published this year. Now, the webpage for Chris Hawley's paranormal website is Endless Journey, Endless, E-N-D-L-E-S-S, Journey, J-R-N-Y, bit of abbreviation, .blogspot.com. Oh, Chris, welcome to the show. I'm thrilled you're back as a return guest, as are the listeners. Chris, new developments continue to occur in this world since you last joined us this past autumn.
Oh, yes. It just never seems to find a dull spot in there. As soon as I finish writing about something or thinking about something, someone either contacts me or calls me or has something happen that is close to where I live, or it just never stops. And if it's interesting and it's unexplained and it needs to be known, I can't help myself. I have to go see what's going on.
Yes, you're a consummate researcher, and not only do you want to provide people with very much needed information, but also moral support, and that's very much appreciated in this world. It's definitely needed. Now, Chris, you frequently have written about possible changes in 2012 with your last article entitled The Era of 2012. Now, as our audience will recognize, recent news of solar flares, coronal mass ejections, and other activities have been noted in the news, thankfully. Nothing too severe. Our Earth's magnetic sphere serves as a great shield, but do you sense that there could be a worrisome increase in the frequency and magnitude of these solar events? And, boy, you know some great material as well from Major Ed Dames at your site, and there are just interesting indications that could be in a bit of a transition.
Oh, I think this, without question, not only the Earth, it's our sun is in a cycle change, which affects us directly, and that this is going to continue. If I'm not mistaken, I think I read that the solar flare or sunspot causing solar flare activity, however it plays out, is going to intensify in 2013, which will mean, you know, a great deal to us if we ever get hit in such a fashion that we're lined up, take a direct smack, and our, you know, energy grids, our communication grids, all that fails or, you know, goes down. We're in a world of trouble here on Earth. And it looks to me that that is going to happen. I found it very unusual. I knew I was in the era of 2012 when I opened my email and found a notice from my cable provider and my, you know, internet and television and cell phone provider that I'm going to probably lose service a few times or have problems with my service from, I guess it was March 6th to March 10th or 11th, they predicted, because they felt that the hits to their satellites and their you know, grid that they use for my service was going to be affected. And yes, it was. My TV kept turning off by itself, changing its channel by itself. My computer was terribly, very, you know, slow. I constantly had my telephone calls drop, and it was horrible for the whole week. So I think that we're all going to have to get used to a lot more of that. And I think it's not nature. It's what's going to happen, sun to the earth, and we can like it or lump it, but we're not going to stop it, and we shouldn't get terribly concerned if anything, you know, really supernatural, we're all going to die. It's a cycle, a natural cycle, and we just have to hold on and ride it and hope for the best.
Well said, and you know, Chris, as I noted, you do emphasize in your articles, or at least a good portion of them, the importance of being prepared for emergencies of any type. And you know, Chris, I noticed that even before we reach the official spring point here, there already have been recent and serious tornadic outbreaks this year, 2012, and just hopefully this year won't be as major as last year, that Fukushima Daiichi crisis originating from the March 2011 great earthquake and tsunami does continue to present some worrisome aspects. So,
well, I think that that's also going to continue on Earth. I think we are just in a time when historically we are ready for all these things to occur again. Don't forget they've happened many times before. That's why the continents are the way they are, and everything on Earth is as it is. It was due to all these things, these eruptions and these things happening before to the Earth. Well, they're not going to just stop. It's going to continue. Some things have cycles, like volcanoes and earthquakes and things like that. And unfortunately for us, some of the major ones are now not only due, but overdue. So, yes, they're going to happen. You can't stop that. What you can do is prepare for it so that if it happens, you can survive and get to the place you need to for the world to get able to get up and running again. For instance, if you don't have electricity for 3 or 4 weeks, you have to be able to live through that period, be it in the hot, hot summer or the, you know, a brutal cold winter. Just doing nothing isn't going to work, and I think that's why there's a fright that there'll be, you know, terrible death overtaking parts of the world. And well, if we're totally unprepared for the simplest of things, can you imagine what will happen if we have tremendous, you know, catastrophes? So I think mankind has to really turn around and face themselves in the mirror and say, you know what, this is all going to happen, and we're going to, you know, ride it out and come out the other end to the best of our ability, which will play out on how well we are prepared. And then you have to decide what you can do to help you and your family and your loved ones get past a simple power outage for a week or a tremendous catastrophe that might take a few months before, you know, they get up and running to help you. Can you, you know, you have to be able to help yourself during these times. And that's what I'm trying to get across to everyone. It isn't a paranormal issue as much as this is what's going to happen now. It's happened before. It's going to happen again. You can't ignore it. Can't make believe it's not going to be. You can't decide you don't want it to happen and think, okay, I won't think about it, it won't happen. Because those are the people who are going to have a tough time surviving. I mean, as I said, focus on the fact, what are you going to do if you're out of power for, let's say, 2 weeks? because that probably definitely is going to happen in the next maybe 2-3 years. Focus on getting past that type of catastrophe, and I think you'll be all right. But I think that we're going to see some really big things happen on Earth.
No, thanks for that excellent advice. And, you know, Chris, on another subject, you have written interesting articles at your blogspot, endlessjourney.blogspot.com, and those include those with the focus on the interesting hum heard across the United States and the globe, and now this new phenomenon of the noises in the environment. Now, on your article, The Return of the Hum, A Super Annoying Mystery, end quote, you mentioned the annoying return of the hum to your environment, but also across the United States. And now, Chris, now we have this winter, these unusual sounds being heard in the environment, somewhat akin to the humming, but you've done some interesting research on that. Now, number one, you said that on these odd noises in the environment that are being portrayed on YouTube, of course, and I agree with you, many could be just through the use of computer software and just kind of a fun hoax, but some are just too interesting not to be to be dismissed. They just seem to be very substantive, a few of them. And, Chris, you make some great points. You note that, for example, around the urban areas, that the background sound, the ambient sound, is that of a mechanical noise, whereas in some of the more suburban and provincial areas, it's more of a biological sound, as though people were hearing dogs barking or that type of or biological or natural atmospheric sound. Very, very intriguing. Chris, what's the update on the hums? And now, I know we have some dear friends here in the room in the Staten Island, New York City, who've heard some of these sounds. Any sounds there on Long Island, and any reports coming in?
Well, it's very interesting. We still hear out on the island. Now, I'm talking about from the middle of Long Island out towards Montauk Point. So it's really far less population than west of us, where you hit Nassau County, Queens, and the city boroughs. That's like another world from where the end of Long Island is. On the end of Long Island, the middle and the end out, people are hearing or constantly complaining about and searching for that diesel engine hum, which sounds like there's a diesel truck outside at the end of your block idling, but you can never find it. And it's very annoying because it can go on for hours and hours. So if you're sitting and working, let's say, at the computer or reading a book or just trying to make dinner, this hum just doesn't stop. That diesel engine sound is there, and it really starts to grate on your nerves. That, I have had the experience with my son, who lives down the block from me, and his wife, and a different neighbor, that we went searching for it more than once. One time, like 3 o'clock in the morning, another time during the broad daylight, and another time, I think it was around 7 in the summer. We searched every street. We went in a big, round grid circle and could not find anything making that noise. We then started to discuss it with other family members and friends and found that they, too, not only heard it, but went to look for it and could not find it. We do not know what is producing that sound, however. We live very close to, well, I would say within, maybe 15 miles, 20 miles of Brookhaven Lab, which has that great big atom smasher, which is, I think, a mile and a half or something like that around underground that spins. And I was wondering, and that's located very close to the shoreline of Long Island Sound, that when they spin, that the vibration isn't somehow affecting the water and coming up and through vibrational sound across the Long Island coastline. Now, that's the only thing I can think of, and that's probably not a good one. Now, the city noise is very mechanical. I listened to many, many YouTubes, and, of course, some of them I think were fake. They were just, hoaxes, as you said. That is like 90% of what you find on with the videos. But there were some of them that were people that were really capturing a very strange noise in their neighborhood, in their area. And you can ask the people in Staten Island, is it a mechanical type sound? Almost like a very distant factory was running and it was caught in the atmosphere and you were hearing the echoing from it. Very strange. And that's a whole different, I think, scenario going on. And as you said, the biological one, which is up in the Rockies and Canada and places like that, and you're in the wilderness in, let's say, Montana, whatever, they're hearing what sounds to me like growling, this overbearing coming from everywhere growl come through the area, you know, it's like a very strange sound. So they're all hearing different odd sounds. I had a reader write in and say to me that she's wondering, as far as the mechanical sound they're hearing in the cities and the hum that I'm hearing out here, if it isn't something to do with our massive technology that we're now using, all this huge wireless and, you know, all our technology, if it isn't our cell phones and our BlackBerries and our iPads and our, you know, portable laptops and everything, if that isn't producing some kind of echoing effect in the atmosphere that's back bouncing back at us. And I thought that was a very interesting thought. But I don't know. I do know it's going on, and it's probably another thing we should not ignore. But, you know, where do you go for it? How do we get people to even stop and, as a group, listen and realize it's there and it shouldn't be? That alone is a problem. So I don't know what to make of it all, except that it's going on.
And those are observations and research. You know, Chris, when you referenced Brookhaven National Labs, is that correct? I noticed from a great past article of yours, you mentioned the, quote, spinning the relativistic heavy ion collider, end quote. Boy, that's fascinating. Pardon my Boston accent. I love Boston, but sometimes my accent does manifest. And I'm proud of it. Also, you know, when you mentioned, that was regarding the hum, regarding the noise, how interesting that we had a past guest, L.A. Marzulli, suggest it might be the thinning of the veils between dimensions. And, you know, Chris, you mentioned that favorite topic of mine again, and that is Montauk. You've done great articles on unusual activities around Montauk, the reports, Montauk, Rock Island. And I wanted to note an interesting film I recently saw on the subject of Montauk and alleged events there. At the International UFO Congress in Scottsdale this past month, one of the films focused on Montauk. It did receive a prize, and what I found the most intriguing were the comments of individuals in that area who appear in the film. To me, they provide the most significant aspect of that film, and the film was entitled The Montaucs with director Christopher Garitano. Boy, you've done interesting research there, Montauk, Long Island, and across the United States and globe. Good for you. You're to be commended on that. And, Chris, now I want to change. Oh, there's so many things here. Well, next, and I want to make sure, too, that this isn't too intense a subject for some of our, well, for you, our listeners, or for myself, because I was very compelled by this material. It is the article on the real-time abductee group. You've written a series of articles at your blogspot, the last one entitled More Information Concerning the Real-Time Abductees. Kudos to you on that. I've also very much liked the article in the past that you wrote, which had the title The Most Unusual Abductee, about a lady who was unusually gifted, brilliant, had unusually large blue eyes, but did have scars and suffered from rashes. Now, Chris, on this group, you noted that there was a steady attrition in the number of members. Was that due to both the emotional intensity of the remembered events, and also was there that concern that they didn't, they wanted to maintain their privacy? Hi, can you hear me, Chris?
Yeah, what happened? I lost everybody.
Well, you know, it just got really a silent to me, too. And here's a note from our... Oh, thank you. Joe, in the interim, called you back. Thank you. Oh, boy, I'm sorry as I show myself up to be the little old lady I am. Hopefully happy little old lady. Chris, on your great articles, several have really compelled me. Very compelling, very remarkable. One of the series includes that on the real-time abductee group. This winter, the last article in the series was entitled More Information Concerning the Real-Time Abductees. In the past, too, you've written excellent work on, for example, the most unusual abductee, about a lady unusually gifted, brilliant, but she had very large blue eyes. She did suffer some effects from the encounter. She had scars. She suffered from rashes. Chris, this has been remarkable, your research on that group. There's been a steady attrition in the members, but number one, it must be the emotional intensity that occurs in both discussing and remembering abduction encounter events.
Yeah, there is. And working with this group was exhausting to end for me. Mm-hmm. It was the type of thing where you would sit and, you know, sit with each other and talk and discuss things, and then everybody would have to go lay down and have a cup of tea. I mean, it's rough. It's also stressful on the body, where they would get physically ill, even trying to, you know, go through and tell me their experiences that they've encountered over their lifetime and memories they've had. They was not uncommon where someone would have to excuse themselves and go throw up or get physically ill. It's much different. The people I deal with and the research that I've done is a lot different than the other things you read or find on this subject matter. It's a lot darker, harder, and more severe. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, you know, Chris, here I'd like to note that sometimes when experiencers get together as well, they can have further abduction and encounter events. For example, at that recent IUFOC Congress in Scottsdale, Yvonne Smith was one of the presenters. She's a certified hypnotherapist, author of a very popular book, Chosen, Recollections of UFO Abductions Through Hypnotherapy, and she's also about to release her second book on the Coronado Island abductions. But, you know, she gave a great presentation, lovely lady, very gifted like yourself. Now, she also gave in the morning an experiencer session at this IUFOC event. Well, for some reason or another, I never did have the chance to arrive there at 8 a.m. in the morning. But, you know, a small number of those who did attend did have anomalous experiences at the conference. And these anomalous events, by a small percentage of the experiencers who attended Yvonne Smith's experiencer sessions there at the Congress in Scottsdale, were described, or just noted anyway, or summarized by researcher, writer, and artist Mike Cleland at his site, hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. And, you know, as I remember, Chris, just quickly, you stress the real-time element because these individuals are taken during their busy daily life. They can remember sometimes the beginning of the abduction occurs, but only little of any of the events actually during the And, you know, I would suggest again that the intensity as well of discussing and remembering these events could destroy the cohesion of a group or even just their a state of comfort, security in discussing these events. And, you know, Chris, I also remember you indicated that you and others, from your research, perceived a danger of technology. Is that the possibility of harm in humans overly exposing themselves to technology that was... I'm trying to think, too, are these warnings that you're receiving from your research coming both from your research with the experiencers, but also, too, just from your very brilliant analysis of what's happening now with advances in technology?
Well, it's both. And what our fear is not that the technology is going to, you know, give them a, you know, brain tumor or something. It's that the technology, in our opinion, is a very played, well-played, look at it as a game of cards, a very well-played card in the path of human control. In other words, cut to the chase here, mm-hmm. I think that technology, as it is being used and has been set out to the mankind, is a method to control each and every one of us. It's very, very easy to take and get a group together of any kind of beast, in this case humans, and control them by having them all cooked, hooked up, to the same grid where they can be spoon-fed, probably, I mean, you know, 24 hours a day. Sometimes I think some of these young people have something in their hand or connected to their head that they are wired into, and that is easily used, very easily used, to download whatever they want into that person whenever they want. So a good way to get control of any population is to feed them all this technology, which we're really not, I don't think, prepared to deal with because we don't use it correctly. It should be a tool, not a way of life. And take and get us all addicted to it, which everybody does, and then use it to control us by feeding whatever information or theory or whatever they want us to do, go left, go right, go straight ahead. As long as we're plugged in, we're being downloaded, and that's dangerous. I think if you don't want to lose your humanity, turn off your technology and put it down and start to physically look into the eye of the person you're talking to and deal with them one-on-one. We are removing ourselves from human-to-human contact and hooking ourselves up into a world of technology, and it is dangerous and going far too quickly and making it far too easy for whatever and whoever wants to control us. I think it's deadly.
Boy, those are powerful, very powerful arguments there, Chris. And you know, Chris, I really was very much struck by your article, quote, "Mixing Life with Machine, a Big No-No in My Eyes," end quote. It's a very insightful article. And you know, it really discusses some interesting ongoing research and projects that are underway right now in the contemporary society. For example, you mention the research that is being sponsored and visual or motivated by a brilliant Russian media executive, Dmitry Itskov. And you note, after your very compelling article about the importance of our maintaining our humanity, the fact that there are plans now to have the human consciousness transferred into a robot, or at least that is projected as a positive goal. And this article was yours was brilliant, and you also gave as further explanations and just further very strong backing elements to your argument, the article by Rob Waugh, which is entitled "Who Wants to Live Forever? Russian Project Aims to Transplant a Human Brain into a Davros-style Robot Body Within 10 Years." And that's fascinating. Just a subtitle, "Entrepreneur Claims to Have 100 Scientists Working on Project Aims to Transplant Human Mind into Robot Body in 10 Years. Claims next stage of science is to create a new human body. This project is leading to immortality," says Dmitry Itskov. Now, this guy is a brilliant Russian media entrepreneur, but you know, I agree, there could possibly be dangers here. And you know what's really cool about this, or, of course, it's also very interesting, is that they do have, Mr. Itskov and team would like to develop a system whereby the brain and human consciousness could be successfully transferred to a robot to preserve the consciousness and sentience of the particular human who has passed. But then also, they're going to further evolve that into having the consciousness housed in a holographic body. Wow, that's far out. That's a bit frightening.
I'll tell you, I don't think I read anything in the last 4 years that upset me as much as the articles you just talked about and those technologies. It made my skin crawl, and it also, you know, rang a bell right away for me. Of course, those who visit us probably are visiting us now and taking us for whatever purpose now probably went down the same road. And it's very possible that their biological makeup was so mixed with holograms or robotics or machines that they lost their way with their biological part. And maybe the ability to reproduce it, which may be they come here and not only take us, but take certain people over and over. It has nothing to do with that person other than probably their DNA, their genetics, their biological makeup. That once they find a group of people, let's say, that give them exactly what they need easily, they just tag them, which I think is done with, If you're an abductee, a lifetime abductee, probably all your cells are part of this tagging. In other words, to find you, all they have to do is hone in on your cells, and they can find you wherever you are. And if they need a little of your adrenaline system or your hormones or something like that, which is where I think it lies, they come down, take you, knock you out. You don't know what happens, and they put you back, and you feel sick for a week. But they took what they wanted. It's a lot easier than trying to farm us, maybe in a different atmosphere, which they may do anyway. But it's easy. It's like us going out and collecting the eggs from the chickens. So I think that they got themselves, perhaps, down that road by doing exactly what these guys are thinking about doing to us. And my reaction is, take your machine and shove it away from my biological body, my soul, and my humanity. I think I'd like to hold on to it. And I think we should hold on to it. And, you know, that's why I am really against all of these things, all of it.
Well, you speak very eloquently on those points. Now, you know, Chris, you reference from your research that people will report to you, both in this real-time abductee group and other people writing in, that when they've encountered some of these beings, they do perceive a sense of emotional coldness. Do you think that it's because some of them are partly technological and partly biological? Gee, here it kind of dovetails into Nigel Kerner's research. But also, you've received research and reports on a full spectrum of beings. Are they all composed of both the technological and biological, sort of a symbiotic component system?
Well, I've gotten all different reports on that, but a great deal of them say that they don't feel the warmth they do from other living beings, even a dog or a cat for that matter, that there's something definitely missing. My theory is they're either, as I said, mixed with machinery to the point that that's lost on them, or it's just not their way. It's not the way they are built. It's not the way they roll. They don't have emotions. We shouldn't try to give them what humans have because they're not human. Or lastly, they are just robots. They're no living creature at all. They're just machines doing the work for an intelligent-driven whatever it is. So there's all kinds of theories there, and I think probably it's not one answer. I don't think there's one answer to any of this. I think there's many different things out there we don't understand. There's many different type of beings interfering with the human race, and I think we've got a little bit of everything going on in there. I don't think one, like let's say it's the Greys. They're the ones that caught us in this type of ship, and that's what it's all about. No, I don't think so. I think it's many different things going on. Look out in the universe. Look up. It's not just one thing that's out there, and that's not including dimensional or even different universes or time or the future. You know, all these things that may be coming back are coming in to deal with us as we are here in this time, in this place, as humans on this planet. So my answer is yes, it's all of it probably.
Pardon me, a bit of an allergy. Chris, that really is so interesting where it suggests the full spectrum and also varied sources for the origin of these beings, whether it's the multiverse, other dimensions, or just the vastness of space. Now, Chris, I've also noted here that not only do you discuss in your articles an interesting spectrum of beings and also anomalous occurrences with encounters and otherwise in daily life, but also you've gone into the hybrid subject as well, and boy, this is intriguing. For example, your article, The Strangest Strangers, relates reports of apparent hybrids who seek to converse with and learn from humans, although these individuals are in physical form, are apparently, from their appearance, definitely not from the human mainstream, not from the human genome or human race. Now, Chris, I'd love to have you just mention here that account of the brilliant visitor who visited your chat room that was dedicated to the sciences and technology. That there are many scientists who visited this room, and an unusual individual began to visit and give information there. That's a fascinating story.
Yeah, and that was a story that I got a lot of hate mail about. People were actually angry at me for writing that story. And it was because I would not tell them where to get in the car and go look at this man. And that was basically it. I would not do that. They didn't understand. I could end up dead. My family could end up dead if I step over a line I shouldn't and do something that's that dangerous. So they, you know, live with themselves, and I'm not going to tell them. But this was, and for instance, they were very angry that if I'm telling the truth, why don't I have pictures of them? I do. I most definitely do have pictures of him. We captured him for, I guess almost, 8 months on camera. We all have took pictures of him. But we're definitely not going to give him to anyone but to get us killed. They could find him. And I don't think he's a hybrid. I think he's an alien. And I always did. I think he's an alien that lives here. They got him into the best human form possible, which wasn't so good, because he's frightening. And he was absolutely brilliant. He was in this was years ago when the chat rooms were not what they are today. They were small, and you had private chat rooms on certain subjects. And this one was filled with scientists. And they were going in there and basically discussing on things they were working about and helping each other and just talking about things that interested them. And this man showed up. And it was the beginning of webcams also. And he knew the answer to everything. And that was what I thought beginning. No matter what they talked about, this guy knew the science behind it. No matter what problem they had, he could lead them to a way out of it. He was the brilliant of the brilliant. And we would put on our cams and ask him, it started with, they were talking about a new book that was out, and I don't remember what it is right now. I think it was Synergy. And, of course, he had that book. So then they would start talking about other books they had, and he would say, oh, yeah, wait a minute. And he had a roll chair. He was at a desk with his computer, with his camera on himself, and there were bookcases behind him. But nothing, you know, not outrageous. It's like what we have in our own houses. And he would roll away and come back with whatever book they were talking about. So he obviously had thousands of books, old and new, and it got to the point that they would sync up titles that were so obscure that he couldn't possibly have them. He'd go off and come back with the book. So they didn't know, was this, he's doing this with holograms, he's doing some kind of technology trickery, but he had every book ever written, it seems. That was when we realized that this was really something odd. But before that, he became a main focus for this small group of scientists because of his appearance. He was completely—he was as white as snow. He had no pigmentation at all in his body, yet he had large eyes that were a very dark blue, I believe, is the best way to describe them. Not like an albino. He had no other albino tendencies other than no pigmentation in his body whatsoever, and no hair, no eyebrows, no eyelashes, nothing. He was totally hairless and extremely thin. If you talked to him for a long enough time, you would notice his neck was sort of kind of collapsed down to it was almost his head just sitting on his shoulders by the end of the conversation, and he would move off of camera and do what I would say, reline himself and come back and look more human again. We then started to really question him because there was no, you know, we wanted to know why, what would cause you not to have any pigmentation or hair, and he would tell us these ridiculous stories. He's telling it to a room full of scientists that basically said back to him, you're lying. You know, really, what happened? We started to spook him to the point where he finally left the group, but before he did, he took and went into a private room with me and two other physicists, one a very good friend of mine, and told us, flat out, he was here visiting, he was going to be leaving, and that we really needed to straighten ourselves out as, like, a society, that we were making way too many problems. I did not see him after that, and I don't want to find him. I have heard that he's actually back, but I'm not going to look for him. I'm afraid of him. I'm afraid for my family. But he's an alien, and he's here, and he was messing with the people on the Internet. But only the scientists he went after.
Well, you know, Chris, that's so interesting, and thank you for that correction, that apparently, from the reports, he was an alien. And also, an element, further elements of high strangeness, that individual who went to correspond with him, and I guess on the webcam he showed the piece of correspondence, the letter or whatever it was, but then later the physical address could not be found for allegedly where this person was located.
Oh, that's also, right.
Yeah.
Yes, we sent him material, and he got it and held it up for us on the cam. So thanks for sending me whatever it was. I really went, you know, thanks, I got this, and here's your thing. And they immediately then started to Google him on Google Earth to pinpoint his location, because they were going to go over there, the men, the group of men in this science group, because he was just too much of a too strange. So we Googled it and found it to be a lot, an empty wooded lot in Florida, actually, I'll tell you that much. No house there, no house ever there. So how that all happened, we don't know.
Boy, that's intriguing. And you know, Chris, just some sort of final comments on this. I noted in your report that during the final chat room session, at that point there was just yourself and a scientist, a physicist with you.
Mm-hmm.
You became quite frightened, but during this final event, as he was speaking again about great knowledge and eloquence on different science topics, I guess his appearance seemed even more unusual in the neck sort of morphing or sinking into the shoulders, and
yes.
It almost became holographic. Chris, do you think that this alien was using technology or manipulation, or just that's the way he is, or was?
You know, I don't want to give away too much here, but I think
mm-hmm.
it's the suit they had him in, and I think it was very uncomfortable for him, and
mm-hmm.
I think that he was, whatever he was, did not look anything like the human form thing that they had him in. I think he was in a suit. It was very uncomfortable, almost like it was itchy to the point he couldn't stand it. Someone did physically see him, and he was a being. They did not. It was not on the computer. It was in real life. Did finally meet him, did lay their eyes on him, and he was stranger than strange in real life, much more so than even seeing him on the computer. And I have been sworn to leave that alone, but that's the truth. So if he's here, you can only imagine what else is here.
Well, those are intriguing reports. Now, you know, Chris, on that concept of the different pigmentation, and we have a question here from one of our favorite researchers, he usually goes by the name of Avenger, mentioning, was it a tall white? And from the description, even though this being was tall, no, the traits didn't seem to have the symmetry, the beauty of the tall whites in their own form, from reports of Charles Hall in Millennial Hospitality. So this wasn't a tall white, but you do think it was another form of alien. People reported it as being alien, and there were a number of scientists in that room with you. Chris, I wanted to note, too, your brilliant research as best conjecture on these matters. Boy, it was an interesting study on humans with a blue skin appearance. Your article is entitled Blue People, A Door Towards Thinking About Other Life Forms, end quote. And it mentions that interesting genetic anomaly of an individual's appearing to have blue skin, the members and descendants of the Fugate family of Kentucky and neighboring areas. And I guess this family, and please correct my pronunciation, suffered from a blood disorder named methemoglobinemia, pardon the mispronunciation if so, where an abnormal amount of methemoglobin, a type of hemoglobin, is produced, but this prevents the methemoglobin prevents the oxygen's normal distribution and leaves those affected with a bluish cast to their skins. Boy, some of those people did look blue, but I guess they lived, they had full longevity, and they could fully function.
Yeah, they were very interesting, the blue people. I thought they were just stunning. They were so different. And I thought, well, if that's happening to us, and I don't know where the base of that disorder came from, which is probably a very interesting piece of research right there, among, you know, along with the why is there Rh-negative blood or actually blue-eyed people in the world. They really can't, you know, pinpoint where that started from. Well, I would have to feel that way about this kink in this family and this particular disorder. But if that happened here, can you imagine in the total universe and all things, the different type of life forms that could have developed, including just one of pure energy, which if you were pure energy, you would need to build some type of suit like the strangest man that we all met and get in there to function with people so they could deal with you. I think that was, you know, my whole point. You've got to really blow your mind open and understand that life forms, intelligent life forms, can come in infinite ways and styles and looks. And I think the only thing that would be needed was a way to manipulate matter to build whatever it is technology they need. Other than that, they could come in any shape, form, consistency, material. You know, it's mind-boggling.
Indeed it is, and please pardon that the sound of my keyboard there. I just had to give an instruction to our wonderful network owner. What's interesting as well is, now Chris, no one is suggesting here that these people, the Fugates, suffered, were aliens, even though they did have this
disorder,
anomaly, yes. Right. But what's very intriguing is people do report seeing blue aliens, and also... Sam, I'll get to your question in a minute, Sam. It's very interesting. Also, on the studies of the blood, ICAR, the International Community for Alien Research, has excellent researchers, including our director, November Hansen, brilliant. She's an author, and several other fine directors and researchers. We've done major studies on experiencer blood types. Very interesting as far as the breakdown of the geographic regions and types. It's really very, very interesting. Now, we've got about 8 minutes in. I don't know if you've seen this. I just recently saw it. I think that this is what our great researcher, Sandman, is referencing here. He's wondering, Chris, have you heard about the bubbles that have been found in our galaxy? Sandman, you weren't talking about those apparent wormhole phenomena that Jaime Maussan has just, that's been placed on Facebook today. Jaime Maussan has an interesting series of tape materials and interviews about wormholes being seen above Russia, Mexico, and other areas across the world, rather. No, he's saying they're new stars. I don't know about that. I have to check it out. Gee, I missed something important. Sandman, you're mentioning it as new stars. Interesting. Well, that further contributes, Sandman, to the realization that our universe is a very complex, magnificent, and varied environment, and the multiverse probably does offer a full spectrum of teeming life out there. Let me see here. Well, in the next 6 minutes, Chris, what I'd love to get to, and that is chemtrails. You do write several articles on them. Several chemtrails have been reported around your area and across the country. Now, the last article you note is entitled "The Spraying Continues" on the chemtrail subject. Now, Chris, did I correctly interpret this that you think, you posit that perhaps where chemtrails are a worldwide phenomena and that there are substantive reports of the spraying, that perhaps these chemtrails could represent a proactive approach to a serious matter?
Absolutely. Chemtrails are probably the world's biggest organized peaceful movement ever known on this earth. Every country, I would say, has been sprayed. Most, I guess, civilized country is involved. You can find chemtrails being over everywhere on the earth. It's an organized, massive movement of major, you know, major complex size that's been done to prevent something. And I would think it's from the sun. I think we're reflecting a lot of what we're being hit with back out into the atmosphere.
Well, that argument sounds like a very sensible one.
You don't organize something that big without it being very important to the planet.
Yes, and the reports about the chemtrails do continue. We do get reports of those in the network chat room and elsewhere. And it's an intriguing phenomenon. Several reports on that, and they are ongoing, and they're worldwide. So it's definitely a subject matter worthy of consideration and research. Also, Chris, I really liked the idea. We've got like 5 minutes left, and I just wanted to mention this before our first break. Chris, I also like that aspect of your posting the information from a reader on the huge underground tunnels in Turkey, indicating a metropolis using the underground as their primary environment.
Yeah.
And your article describes the importance of these tunnels. Apparently, they're in Cappadocia, in Turkey's central Anatolian region. And, you know, Farah Yurduzu, the Turkish and the Turkish ufologist, she also spent some years in America. Lovely lady. She'll be presenting back here in the United States. She's mentioned the importance of these Turkish tunnels. And I thought that information was really very, very interesting. Now, oh, and Chris, not to push you, in 3 minutes before the next break, I wanted to mention the fact that more reports are coming in of people seeing planes, you know, just normally traversing the sky, but that suddenly they seem to kind of blink out as though it might be a UFO or something that was using that as a cover. Any more reports of that?
I hear get reports about it all the time, and I've seen it with my own eyes, and I don't know what's going on with that. It's bizarre. Is a huge plane right there, you're looking at it, and boom, it's gone. It's either a hologram or a cloaking device. What else could it be?
Yeah, very, very interesting. And, you know, Chris, any further reports about UFOs over Long Island? I know you've had an important event there that occurred years back of a crash on Long Island. Any other major events or flaps?
Well, people are constantly seeing things on Long Island, and they take it very well. It's not like an oddity as it once was. I think we see so much of it that they'll say, well, oh, yeah, I saw something over the ocean, you know, last week. They're out there. That's the attitude that Long Islanders are taking. So, yeah, it's a constant hotbed here, and I think it's its location in the Atlantic Ocean that has a lot to do with it.
You know, I think so as well. I think so as well. I know after the break, there's so many topics here that I'd like to discuss. Oh, and you know, before we do, and we're all getting ready for great St. Patrick's Day tomorrow. You know, Chris, I wanted to note the fact that I believe that from your research, those in the real-time abductee group were Irish. And,
yes,
of course, Irish heritage is noted in many of the reports. And one thing that I love about that, of course, I'm mostly Irish myself, Daryl Smith has been doing some research on that. And, of course, the human race all has its great traditions of bravery in every race. But Daryl was noting, too, that he thinks that there might be a particular alien interest in Irish warrior-like capabilities, which, I know, to me, I found very interesting.
Yeah, I would have to go into that, you know, more. But, yes, in my group, everyone was Irish, had some type of Irish background. There was not one person in the real-time abductees that did not have some type of Irish blood running through them. So I found that very, very interesting. They all were also Rh-negative blood. So that's also very interesting.
That is very intriguing. And, you know, there is a definite Rh segment from the different groups, the different blood groups that have been noted on the research, the analysis that ICAR is doing on the reports of experiencers and their blood types. And one thing, though, I've got to, again, commend you on, you do emphasize that there is this aspect of transgression of human freedoms where these people are undergoing these experiences and sometimes procedures or just examinations without informed consent. You know, I think you beautifully express that. And also that concept, too, of the aliens attempting to use the resources of our planet. Some of your research and the argument elements also reflect to me the work of Marshall Vian Summers. I know his group, I think it's the Greater Society. Well, it's Marshall Vian Summers, it's a related group, have produced an excellent book, an excellent document, rather, The Declaration of Human Sovereignty. It actually was written by some attorneys. I don't know who they are. I haven't met them, but I've been told this, and it's one of the most beautiful documents I've ever read. Again, The Declaration of Human Sovereignty. Well, I hope I've not been rambling. We're about to take about an 8-minute break. And oh, Chris, I love having you on as a guest. You're a wonderful guest. Very informative.
Thank you.
A lot of thought-provoking concepts and research. And during our break, to our listeners, Chris Hawley's excellent website, Chris Hawley's Paranormal World, can be found at endlessjourney.blogspot.com. Journey is abbreviated J-R-N-Y. Again, endlessjourney.blogspot.com. We'll be right back. And thanks so much, Chris. We'll be back at 8. And everyone, have fun there. I'm going to be getting myself some cookies and a little snack in the interim. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
Me too.
everyone. Trish Sheridan, host of A Global Focus. Come join us each Friday evening at A Global Focus's new time, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Come join the discussion.
Open your mind to the high strangers, UFOs, paranormal, cults, metaphysics, and politics. We always march into the apocalypse every Saturday at 11 p.m. Eastern. TheChurchOfMavis.com, ParanormalRadioNetwork.org. J-Con is watching.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hey, hi there. Got your attention? I'm Gia Scott, and I was curious what you were doing from 6 p.m. Central Time on Tuesdays. See, I host this really interesting little radio program that airs live then, and we bring in all sorts of guests, authors, experiencers, and everything in between. It's paranormal and guaranteed to make you go, My guest list is always up at www.giascott.com, and do tune in to the Dawn of Shades from 7 to 9 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Hello, I'm Chip.
And I'm Nicole.
Together we host the Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
We broadcast live every Monday night at 11 p.m. Eastern for 2 full hours. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, as well as our website, mindcemetery.com.
We cover all the topics you won't hear on your local news.
Well, I don't really like watching the news anyway.
But this is the perfect show for someone like you.
I wouldn't go that far. After all, I am the skeptic.
So you don't believe in ghosts?
Nope.
UFOs?
Yeah, no.
How about Bigfoot?
Not really. You'll never find a Bigfoot.
How about the lost city of Atlantis then?
Isn't that on Google Earth? No? Then forget it. It's never going to get found.
Looks like I have my work cut out for me then, as I take on a true skeptic as we discuss the latest and hottest topics in the UFO and paranormal fields with some of the most provocative and informative guests to hit the airwaves.
That's right, you do. And it all happens right here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, live every Monday night at 11 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, as well as mindcemetery.com.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Psychic Medium Chris George.
And I'm Stephanie Panetti. Psychic Medium, are you sure about that, Chris? Like
yeah, real funny, Vanetti, but then again, being my girlfriend, you would know. Together, we have Second Sight NYC, a parapsychic radio show based out of New York City.
Join us each week as we journey into the unknown. Let's cross the threshold of reality together.
We take a fun and no-nonsense approach to our show, and we love to interact with our audience. Each week, you can expect a great guest, interesting topics, and strong opinions by myself and Stephanie.
As well as rapid readings, psychic dream interpretations, and the gemstone of the week. And don't ask us a question that you don't want an answer to.
Give us 2 hours of your time to inform, enlighten, and entertain you. Let the journey begin.
Join us.
Light up your night with The Kevin Smith Show. Hi, this is Kevin Smith. Join me Monday through Friday right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Hi, this is Rob Simone, and I want to tell you about my brand new show here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Each week, I bring you the most interesting people on the planet, the most in-depth discussions, and the most controversial issues. We go where no talk show dares to go. Join me every week for the Rob Simone Talk Show here on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Room, just note that you can hear us now. Thanks, Joe, and thanks, Cy, our wonderful Virginia, West Virginia director. Cy, our West Virginia ICAR director, really is an outstanding researcher. And welcome back, everyone, to a great discussion with Chris Hawley. Boy, I'm finding it very informative. And I just want to note here at the beginning of the second segment, and thank you, Joseph, for noting the great audio. Thanks again, Joe, owner of the network. I just want to note before we get underway here that Paranormal Network also has such wonderful programs as UFO Undercover on Wednesday evenings with Joe Montaldo from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, the Dynamic Program on Thursday evenings with co-hosts Chris George and Stephanie Benetti. Chris George and Stephanie Benetti host Second Sight New York City, and boy, was it rocking last night. Very exciting. We also have a new show on Monday. It's an intriguing one. It's entitled Mind Cemetery with our host, Chip and Nicole. Nicole's a lovely lady. She's a bit of a skeptic. And Chip, outstanding researcher. Don't miss it. And, of course, we have on Friday evenings Through the Keyhole with Karen Dolan, an important researcher, on Friday evenings just before this program. Karen's program runs from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern. Now, oh, Chris, before I forget, I just wanted to note you also have some very intriguing articles on Irish traditions in honor of St. Patrick's Day tomorrow about the leprechauns. Now, do you get information on them coming in? Your research has been excellent.
No, not from anyone other than my own grandmother. But besides that, and my family, because I'm Irish, of course. But I have to tell you that my older relatives, you know, my relatives that are, I'd say, you know, 70 and over, have always sworn that there's little people roaming around in Ireland and in, you know, Scotland and all places that are linked to that part of the world. So I don't know what to make of it, because I just don't know what to make of it. I'm not going to call them liars. I'm afraid I'd be struck down.
And you know, people in this world often encounter anomalous events. So, it's another fascinating study.
Absolutely. And you know, I just wanted to go back to that what we were talking about for a minute before. A great deal of the people that I talk to, and I'm rather picky. If I don't think there's a little bit something odd about what you're telling me or your report, I'm not interested. I try to pick people I truly believe through and through had the event they're telling me. And over the years, predominantly they were all had some type of Irish or American Indian in them. I found that very interesting. However, I also, you know, mentioned that they have a lot of Rh negative blood, but I remember reading when I was in school years ago that the Irish, I think, had a very large percent compared to the rest of the world of Rh negative blood. So, but there's some connection there with that being a place that these people are being taken from. It's something to do with their genetics, I'm sure of it, with their biological makeup.
Right, and that reported interest of the aliens in the genome. Now, you know, Chris, another aspect that I find so intriguing about your research is your various articles on the reports coming in as far as types of UFOs, how the different models of UFOs and capabilities evolve. Sometimes there are definite patterns, as
is found in ufology. Any new events on that?
Well, that seems to be staying the same. I do notice a great deal of the orbs seem to be noticed, or I think it's just that they're now being noticed more than before. The pure, like, crystal white type of orb without any type of strobe or different light, those are being seen all over the world, and the red, notorious red orbs. Whether that's because it's something new that's being sent out that's easy to maneuver and just goes out and, you know, looks in at us or not, I don't know. I do know I read an email, yeah, from a woman. Now, I can't remember her state. I'm sorry, you know, I'm getting old, so. But she was somewhere on the eastern part of the United States who looked out a window and saw a red orb looking into the apartment building across from her, actually, like, spying on the people. And she did call the police, which, of course, by the time they came, there was nothing to be found. But it shook her up tremendously, because then it just shot up straight into the air and took off. No reason for the woman to lie about it. She didn't, she wasn't even really a believer. She was more of a skeptic, but she did see that. So I don't know what's going on with that, but I think it's something we need to pay attention to. So if you see a round light that's either hovering or moving oddly and doesn't do what other air traffic does, take a second look and pay attention. And if you can, of course, film it.
You know, that's very good advice. And, you know, I think, too, that aspect of your research and your collecting information and culling the different reports coming in to make sure that the people writing in seem to be presenting a credible and thoughtful case is much to your credit, Chris. Also, the fact that you maintain their confidentiality, that too, is wonderful. This can be a very difficult world for people who know that they've had experiences, and it's wonderful to also keep their interests at heart. Now, back to the community at large. It was last week. I attended the MUFON Greeley meeting, the MUFON local meeting up in Greeley, Colorado. And what I found was very intriguing was the mention of local sightings. And I think that they referenced orbs in this as well. There was some discussion as to whether or not these orbs might be probes, but you know, sent out from the ships. But regardless, it's very, very intriguing. And in other of those meetings, there have been interesting accounts from people present of seeing different alien craft. To me, it always brings a note of interest and credibility when citizens take the time out to know something unusual and feel compelled to attend a meeting to obtain more information.
Well, the best reports I've ever gotten, or photos that I've seen, or videos that I've watched, the most credible ones always came from just some guy going about his business, or some, you know, family or woman, and this thing invaded their territory, you know, and they were able to capture it. They're also the most, you know, interesting stories. I'm not interested at all in dream sequences or long descriptive reports down to, you know, the buttons on the thing. No. If you're having an encounter of this type, you're so frightened and by surprise and stunned that you don't get details like that. But if you talk to them, people like that, you do get a report of actually, you know, what happened. So those are the things that I'm interested in. And I also am aware of the fact that most sightings or encounters are very brief. They're not long-term usually. They see something, it's hovering, they might see it leave or whatever, but it's not like hours, it's minutes at best. And those are the most interesting to me, because I believe them to be real.
That would be very interesting to me as well. And, you know, Chris, off on an aside here, ICAR, the International Community for Alien Research, of course, receives reports on UFOs, although the primary focus is abduction, but we also receive a great deal of material on UFO sightings. And, boy, I must say, that Florida, Louisiana, and that Florida coast really seems to be quite a hotbed of sightings. Chris, do you receive a lot of correspondence from people witnessing anything in Florida or the Gulf Coast?
I've had reports from Florida, quite a few, as a matter of fact, but I get reports from all over the world. I'm stunned at, you know, where people are reading my site and even know that it was possible for them to read it there. A lot of people in Australia see these things and have very, very strange encounters happen to them. And I think it's the nature of the beast, that if they are away from, you know, the crowd, which once you're outside the cities in Australia, you're by yourself usually, you can see or encounter incredible things, and they do. So, you know, that and Canada, also Canada, once you're outside the city limits, the wilderness there, I think, is filled with things that would, you know, make your skin crawl, including animals and all kinds of things, I think, going on up there.
Boy, that's intriguing. Those are intriguing comments. You know, Chris, when you mentioned Canada, I was thinking of the excellent research done by Grant Cameron and his book on the phenomenon Charlie Red Star, that major flap there. Boy, that was very, very intriguing. Also, I'm trying to look here for the article, the title, rather, of your recent article. It was on our U.S. military and the fact that some of our brave servicemen have been seeing UFOs and also experiencing unusual developments afterwards. That's interesting.
Yeah, I have a bunch of reports from them, and it's basically the same thing over and over. So I think that the military are playing with our boys, quite frankly, and that they are unwilling participants in these things. But I have a lot of reports from ex-military people who tell me that they were in an incident where they were taken blindfolded or knocked out, where they don't know how they got to the point that they ended up at, or a craft, or were with beings or things they didn't know what they were used as part of an experiment, and then returned and, like, told it never happened or just not to talk about it. I've also been told by many military men, I would say many, more than 15 over the years, that while they were on duty at a base, they saw a craft. In fact, I don't think it's uncommon. A lot of them are Air Force and Navy, where they were, you know, doing what they were doing, and had an incident, unidentified craft hovered over where they were. And I'm not surprised at that. I don't think anyone could be surprised at that. I think that UFOs and the military probably go hand in hand since the beginning of time. I'm sure they watch all our combat missions and military operations. Wouldn't you, if you were, you know, viewing us or viewing someone else like us, to see what they're doing?
And
that's,
you know,
simple.
Exactly, and pardon my interruption there. You know, in your article, very, very intriguing, entitled "Military Men and Unknown Objects and Experiences," end quote. Chris, you really powerfully note that factor of the anomalous nature of these UFO experiences. And, of course, that's another factor. These brave men have to face the unknown. They're serving their country, and that just produces an entirely different aspect with which they have to deal, or a new aspect. And that's certainly another challenge for them as well. Now, I had mentioned, I mentioned it, a wonderful event on Long Island. It was a crash, and I had it right here. Boy, it was
South Haven.
That's it, South Haven. Yes.
South Haven Park, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was an interesting crash. That crash, the only reason I think it died down and left the, you know, eyes of the public was the timing. It happened right before Thanksgiving time, and people were just really busy. But that craft came in low over the south coast of Long Island from the Atlantic Ocean, came in flaming, flew over a few small towns, hamlets there, because it wasn't populated, still isn't, not, you know, like the rest of Long Island, and came in, flew low over the coast of Long Island, and crashed in that park. And many people saw it fly in. The guy I talked to watched the whole crash. And he had reasons, which I think a lot of people have reasons for not saying things that would stun other people. But his reason not to talk about it is because he was in the park stealing things so often that he didn't want to get caught. And you weren't supposed to be in the park, elk, and you weren't supposed to go in there and take wood or kill ducks or shoot deer or game for, you know, for your own benefit. It's against the law, and it was his way of life. So he was so terrified he was going to be put in jail, he never said anything. But he watched the whole crash. He watched the thing come in, go over the plot, heard it crash, which he said it didn't crash like he thought, a big explosion and like an airplane would. It sort of plumped, just like plunk, you know, into the park. He heard noise. He was terrified. He got out of there, but he had a problem getting out of there because when he ran back to his truck, his old truck wouldn't turn over, you know, right away, and he had to keep trying, and while he was doing that, he could hear what he thought was howling or screaming, which was very unnerving for me, coming from the park, and finally his truck turned over, and he got out of there, and then he sat in his little old falling-down rustic cabin on the outskirts of this park and watched all the emergency vehicles come in to the park, which everybody in the area knew about. However, if you would go and interview, let's say, the chief of the fire department, which I did, he acted like I was completely raving insane, that no such thing ever happened. Well, I don't think so. I have 15 people that said they saw your trucks riding in there, you know? You can't beat that, you know? If it's going to have a lid thrown on it, one person cannot pry it open. And that incident was swept, literally swept clean from that park.
Boy, that's interesting. And pardon my interruption there. You know, I found your article. Boy, it's a good one. It was about that November 1992 South Haven Park crash, as you referenced,
right,
in Suffolk County, New York. Now, your article is entitled, How Quickly We Forget the UFO Crash, South Haven Park, New York, 1992. And you also note in that local, many people reported, or several people reported, seeing local firemen in that area after that event, but later it had to be denied.
Yep. And if you ask them, and not only, you know, when you ask them, you know, when they say you deny or you deny just a little bit too much, you know, you're just too defensive. Well, that's the way I felt when I talked to the firemen out there. Like, too defensive. What are you, crazy? What are you talking about? That never happened. It wasn't like, what do you mean? What? I don't remember. It wasn't natural. It was totally, they were ready for it. So I was not the first person they were denying this to. However, you know, I know a lot of people that live out there, and a lot of them saw this happen. But they have seen lots of things happen over the ocean, and they don't get as excited as I think other people would. I think it's more commonplace, and they just don't get in a uproar over it. And they take it to be a known, unknown craft, and kind of, sort of, it's like China. In China, it's not as it is here when we talk about things. It's more taken for granted, is what I'm trying to say. In China, lots of people see UFOs, and the government has a department that deals with it openly, so their attitude about it is completely different. And so Long Island is the same way. There was an Air Force bound base out there. There's always been UFO sightings out here. Camp Hero is out here. Plum Island was out here. And that's the home of the man with the 18-inch fingers we found dead on the beach. It's a really strange place. And you kind of get used to it. What other people strange is our norm. And that's the fact.
Your research is excellent, and you know, Chris, many people were interested in that Montauk film there at Scottsdale, and again, what I thought was the most powerful element of that film were the comments from the residents of that area. Now, you know, Chris, too, Long Island is, well, in the general geographic vicinity as the crow flies of the Hudson River, of course, with those major Hudson River sightings of the mid-1980s. Do you ever get correspondence on that? Because I heard from one source who's controversial in his writings that people who actually witnessed some of these Hudson River, some of the anomalous craft over the Hudson River, later became experiencers. Any correspondence on that?
No, I haven't. I actually, but I did hear from people who lived in that area about the blackout of 1965. And the things that were flying around at that time. The sky was alive that night. And people from all over, I say hundreds and hundreds of emails I got from people when I wrote about that, saying, you know, I saw it too. Or, you know, my whole family saw a group of UFOs. Or my whole family had lost time. They had enormous amounts of events, encounters, and sightings in that area at that time, but they were right in the middle of it, where the blackout was, you know, a major thing for us out here. Then I heard from them, from everyday sightings. It's mostly on Long Island, or just across the whole world. A lot in Connecticut also, over the Long Island Sound. And it was funny, one of the biggest sightings that I had given to me was from a total skeptic. He's such a skeptic that after viewing with his entire family a huge UFO coming up out of the water, hovering massively over his head, and then taking off into space, still deny it and say it was a hologram or the government or anything, but just couldn't grasp the fact at what he had actually seen. But he was traumatized by it. It was a very interesting report and a very interesting encounter. And I've had all kinds of, lots of things going on in the water, people watching Coast Guard cutters chasing something huge under the water and chasing it right out into the ocean, and just like all kinds of things. It just never stops.
Boy, that sounds intriguing. You know, I remember from a prior interview the research you've done on the USOs, or unidentified submersible objects, I believe, or water UFOs. At least I know that's the correct term, water UFOs, and I'm referencing Carl Feit's great book and website on that. Sounds to me as though crafts have been reported emerging from the ocean.
Yeah, that's seen often. They I think, rest there, or that's where their base possibly is. And of course, you know, their atmosphere is not our atmosphere. So, for instance, they are in the sky to them, landed, you know, out in the wilderness of Canada, which I think they are, or underneath the ocean. They're encased and in their own, you know, environment, so it doesn't matter where they are. It's where they are the safest, and I would think the ocean floor would definitely be a place to pick. I also think, as I said, that the Canadian wilderness is probably a good place to find UFOs at rest, or landing, or going about their business, or walking their Bigfoot, or whatever it is they do up there.
Boy, that's a good point. And luckily, I'm glad I had that term correct, unidentified submersible objects, or water UFOs, per Carl Feit's great book and website. You know, Chris, you'd find this guy interesting. He is from Maryland. He also studied aviation up in New York City. Lot of interesting reports about unidentified craft emerging from the ocean off the East Coast, also near aircraft carriers, and across the globe. Very interesting research, such as yours, which is fascinating as well. Now, you know, Chris, a lot of ufologists now are interested in the aspect of some craft and beings coming from other dimensions. Do you find in Long Island that in those particular areas where UFOs are particularly reported, they also have many accounts of paranormal activities, such as hauntings or unusual creatures or anything like that?
We have all of that on Long Island. It's really over the top. This summer I've plotted out a trip that I'm going to take, and I'm going to go to all the haunted places on Long Island and spend some time there. And the reason I'm going to do that is I took a quick trip to do that. It's not my thing. It's not what I'm into. And actually caught something, I think, on film, and I had it on my site, where we were looking at this old building, took a picture of it because I thought it was just a neat old, you know, a couple hundred year old building sitting there, and took two quick shots. And when we went home and looked at it, there was nothing in the window. The first time we you know, pushed down and took the shot. The very next second, took another shot, and there was something in the window. So I said to myself, what's going on here? And that was on Mount Misery Road. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's a very haunted area of Long Island. So I'm going to go back there. I'm going to go back out to Camp Hero, Montauk Point, and where Kessler's Tower used to be built, go back to that area and look there. You know, a bunch of other haunted locations, and just see what I can see. Kings Park, a mental institution that's been closed for years, is supposed to have just ghosts wandering around the place. Many, many people died there, and I want to go look at that, too. So I'm going to do that this summer to see, as I said, what I can see and, you know, capture anything I can.
Boy, that sounds very like a very interesting tour there of that area. You know, Chris, on Montauk, have you, perhaps you've already said this tonight and I've missed it, I forgot, have you received correspondence from people living in the general Montauk region of unusual activity there or remembrances from decades past?
No, and I don't expect them to, because they're talking about the home of the Plum Island group, meaning that strange stuff's been going on there since the 40s. So they live around it. They're not interested in it. But if you want to know, you have to go out there. Doesn't hurt to be an Islander because you're one of the, you know, good old boys, and sit down and talk to the locals. And then they tell you things. And they'll tell you what they think is nonsense. They'll tell you what they think we're all missing, completely missing, and what they've actually seen. So that's part of what I plan to do.
Sounds like an excellent idea.
Yeah. You know, go to the local place where everybody eats, you know, have a beer with them, bring it up in a certain way. You have to be very careful how you approach people. And if you do this carefully and with kindness, they tell you. And that's what I'm going to try to do.
That's a very wise course of action. Now, Chris, am I remembering correctly that one of the important haunted sites in the Long Island area is near Walt Whitman's former home? And there's also an area that was a former hospital during the Civil War. Or am I confusing sites?
No, that's it. That's Mount Misery area. That's in the middle of Long Island by Huntington. And it's this area that's so strange because it's surrounded by built-up Long Island. Industry, houses, people. And then this area. Drive into it and it's as if you drove back 200 years in time. It's just bizarre. Very few people, big homesteads. You feel like you're lower than the rest of the island. It's dark and kind of tank and hundreds of years old, and it's filled with odd things. I had a something come up to my window and scream at me and disappear right in front of a whole car full of people. We don't know what that was years ago, parked in front of Walt Whitman's father's house at the time. It was bizarre. That's where that house was that I took pictures of, and something was there. And just the feel of it, it's a very creepy, makes your skin crawl area. I will not go there alone. I have to go there with a group and be very careful. It's very uncomfortable.
It sounds to me as though that type of site with a great deal of psychic or paranormal activity to it would be one where you'd really have to be very careful as you research and just reconnoiter the location. Boy, that sounds interesting, though. And, you know, Chris, do you find that Long Island really has a specific atmosphere or environment for these interesting events? Not only its history, but also being a little separate there from the other aspects of New York, from the other locations of New York, rather.
Yeah, it's the way it's located right outside of the city, yet in just a, you know, an hour's time, you're way out on the island, which was all farm country at one point, and you cannot it's an island floating in the Atlantic Ocean. It's close to the a landmass, but on the one side of Long Island, once you go out past the Outer Banks, which are the Outer Islands, Fire Island, there is nothing but ocean. It's you, the sky, and ocean, and nothing else. So what a nice place to enter a populated landmass coming out of the ocean across Long Island, and you can either pick and choose people right there. You know, that's very convenient, or head up into the rest of the United States. So it's just, it's unfortunate location, I think, that a lot of us got involved in our biological makeup in the strange events that took take place on Long Island.
And, you know, you're correct, too, in your descriptions. I like both your arguments and also the description of Long Island. I've been there just a couple of times, but the tracks there that are just so beautifully landscaped and they're very heavily wooded, magnificent scenery there. But you really are a bit, you can't be secluded in your home or also even just traveling.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, people don't realize that, but Long Island has many different natures from just beachfront to the hilly, rocky area on the other side of the island facing Connecticut, and which also can be very desolate in areas. So it's very interesting. And the beach, if you're alone on a beach at night, my advice is don't be. It's just easy pickings. You know, it's just open land, sand, the sky, and the water. So, you know, you have to be careful about your environment also, because things happen to people all the time. Look at all the people that have gone missing that have never been found. You know, take and wipe away all the parents stealing their own children and kids running away and husbands running away. You still get down to millions of people in this world that just disappear from the earth. And how do we know they didn't just disappear from this earth? And that's exactly what did happen to them. So, you know, you got to be careful with yourself, what you do and where you go.
Chris, you made some great points in your articles regarding that really the person in their daily activities should remain aware of their surroundings and keep an eye out just to make sure that the anomalous doesn't catch them unawares. Of course, the anomalous does happen often in high strangeness environments, but just keep that eye out. Just be as prepared as you can be.
That's absolutely right. That's the truth. And we find that you're more unlikely to have a bad experience if you have people around you, lights on, and noise. These are three things that I find can stop or prevent or change the mind of something that may be planning to grab you. So those are things that you should always have. They just don't like attention. But if they can get you walking down the street to your friend's house at night with no one around, even though it's a suburban area and people are right in their houses, you're still an easy grab. So just be logical about it.
Those are strong arguments, and you know, as well, you have some very intriguing ideas about the importance of keeping an open mind in the research, and to realize that if one is researching accounts of encounters with people not from Earth or from a different destination, whether or not it's the cosmos, other dimensions, elsewhere in the multiverse, that they wouldn't think as we do, to always keep the mindset, different theories open, pertaining to the facts, pertaining to the possibilities.
Yes.
I have your points. I think I'm rambling here, but I know you explain this, the importance of this sort of research mode much better than I do.
Well, I just tell people, will you please stop trying to make the aliens or aliens think like a human? It's not going to happen. They're not humans. They don't have human qualities. They don't think like us. They don't act like us. And they don't have the soul that we have, or the compassion is a better word, to living things that we have. It's different. And as long as you keep trying to make them care about world peace, be your savior and fix everything, be loving and kind, you're going to be extremely disappointed. They are not human, and they may not understand those attributes or qualities at all. Completely don't understand them, like you don't understand theirs or their reasons or the way they experience life. It's two different things. Stop trying to always make them human. they are not. And we'll never understand them if we constantly try to put them in human box and form and thinking. So you know, that's very important. And they'll say, you know, well, you know, how come they haven't come down and stopped war? Well, what do they care if we're having war? I mean, let's be honest. Do you care what goes on in the ant field in your backyard or the chicken coop or how mothers throw six baby chicks out of their nests because that's how they do it? That's the way it is. We are today are a different species. They're not here to probably, you know, get too involved or they would be already. They run the show. They're here to look at and do as they please with us for their benefit. Not ours. And they are not human, so they're not going to go about it as you would go about it. They're doing their thing as their nature is, which is not human. So, you know, I try to pound that into people. Stop looking at this with human eyes. If you want to know them, understand they are not you. So, you know, I just really hope people listen to that because it's the way it is.
You know what's interesting on that as well? On just referencing not so much ethics as just mere traits of being. I don't know if she wants to be identified, so I'm just going to say she's a favorite New York researcher of the room. She does some brilliant research. She was referencing on your thought that humans have more compassion, that if humans indeed do have more compassion than certain aliens do, that would mean that in that particular specific case, those humans would be of a higher order than the beings or entities with less compassion. And, you know, to me, that brings it back to that great, those great articles and arguments you have as far as the importance of humans retaining their humanity. Research and development and technology can be great, but you have to just hold on to that important human essence.
Yeah, I don't want to be anything other than a human being and then spend my life trying to be the best human being I can as what I personally feel is my duty in this lifetime. That's the meaning of my life, is to be the best I can in this human form, as a human, as compassionate and kind, and all those good things, and to always do the right thing. I think that's the task we've all been given. However, I do understand that an alien may have a whole different set of tasks, and as far as being compassionate and more or less and who's the better, look at it this way. An alien's compassion and thinking and qualities is probably, that is probably, is completely different than ours. What would you say that, I don't know if I'm putting this correctly, how do we know that they feel the right thing for us to do under their thinking and their quality system would be for us to give up our lives so they can have something spread amongst them that's better for them, that would make us better humans, a better being, where we feel, wait a minute, my dying so that you can be a little better, well, no, that's not the way we look at it. So we have to understand that what they think is compassionate and good and kind, we may be absolutely, you know, horrified at, and vice versa.
Boy, that's interesting. I appreciate those comments, Chris. And, you know, this discussion, your comments have really provoked a very interesting discussion here from our two excellent researchers, one in New York and one elsewhere in America, the West, I believe. She, too, is brilliant. The one in New York believes that, and, you know, I'll be happy to note your name as well, but she's our favorite researcher. She was mentioned, Lily, that on higher order, spiritual level can be an indicator of a higher order. And another researcher here in the room, Goddess of Fire, is saying that perhaps there's also an argument that higher order could be based not on compassion but genetic and energetic ability. And you know, I think discussions like this really just lead to more understanding and further motivation to research, to follow the research.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. All I know is what I know by way of people like me who have had to dealt firsthand with these beings, and I know that that gives me a much different viewpoint and attitude than most people out there. But I can't help that. This has been part of my life, my entire life, and at times excruciatingly painful, you know, physically difficult, mm-hmm. and interfered with my life to the point where I just didn't know how much more I could stand. So that's why I started to, just out of curiosity for my own circumstance, and then found so many people like me that I could not turn away from them, and felt that the best thing to do for people like me would be to write. And the thing just snowballed on me. And, you know, I was hit with paranormal things from every direction and, you know, spent the years picking through and trying to look at the things that interested me that I could handle. But as far as all of the opinions, mine come from the fact I've lived it. I've looked at them. I've dealt with them. I'm physically very harmed from what happened to me over my lifetime. I'm sick a great deal of time from it. And the sun flares that just hit us, the real-time abductees have been so ill this week, including me, that the pain has been so that we've been yelling in pain and not able to stand up and vomiting and, you know, had the runs and just deathly ill. And, of course, we can't just go out and sit in the sun anymore either like we once could, that the sun is our enemy. It burns us. It hurts us. It blinds us. And all of this part of our life experience. So I have very strong feelings on all of this due to the fact I live this every day of my life. It's not something someone's reporting to me or telling me. And I protect the others because I'm very strong who have gone through this as I understand. In there, did that, wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. So that's where I get all my feelings from about all these things. And I believe that the aliens are highly advanced, completely different makeup, emotionally and spiritually and all of that, coming from a whole different wavelength than we are. And they feel we are extremely primitive, very ignorant, and got a long way to go before we are considered on their equal level. And that's why they deal with us as they do. They take, they use, they need, they pull us back.
Boy, those words are so powerful. You know, Chris, I try to keep it in the background, but I too am an experiencer, and I have been assisted by many groups in my lifetime. The National Community for Alien Research have been true friends and colleagues of mine. Your blog is outstanding. I found it very, very helpful. I also like some of the thoughts of L.A. Marzulli, in kind of a spiritual aspect there. Those are helpful. I think this is very important, and I think Icar would agree with me when I say this. We have our international director, Joe Montaldo, in the room. Every human being is precious. If they are being, if they are having encounters with these beings, they still have the right to enjoy their lives, his or her life. And your website and the ICAR group and other groups try to make sure that the experiencers can adapt and meet the challenge, because their life is just as important as the alien life forms, as
right.
the alien lives, rather. And thanks so much for all you do. It's appreciated.
Oh, I appreciate it. And remember, if we were kidnapped by somebody else, everybody'd come to help us. It would be really nice if the people that were taken got the same benefits from their own kind. So when someone tells you, like you just did, that you've had happened to you, we all have to be kind, open-hearted, and understanding. Because you're right, we all deserve our own life. And we all have them. It was just a lot harder for us to do that. So, yeah, I appreciate your kind words, too.
Because it's a definite challenge. And really, each human life has specific goals that is meant to be, that are meant to be achieved in that lifetime. And even just the gift of life itself, to enjoy the universe and the multiverse, it's wondrous, and it shouldn't be in any way overly impacted by even anomalous events like these, which can have such a traumatic effect.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd love to go and sit on my deck and enjoy it like other people, but I can't. But you know what? I do it a different way. I enjoy things in a different fashion. But, you know, if you are being taken and you're listening to this and you haven't talked to anybody about it, find somebody and talk to them, because you deserve a family and love and everything else everybody has, in spite of the fact that you might have to deal with this too. So, you know, it's a hard road to lay out for someone, but look at me, look at you, look at others like us. We've done it. We do it. So, you know, I think all of us can. And everyone else, open your heart and your mind. These are happening, these things are happening to people you know and love. Don't shut them down, laugh at them, or ridicule them. Feel sorry for them, help them, and understand it.
Beautifully said. Now, you know, Chris, I hope so much you'll be a soon return guest. You know I love reviewing your material there, and promise to be a guest back in a couple of months' time. We'd love to hear from you again. You always give some interesting information, very helpful information. And, boy, I'm looking forward to tomorrow's St. Patrick's Day. I hope you have a wonderful time there with your family.
Oh, we Irish, Will, we are. We're cooking already.
It's one of our favorite holidays. Well, Chris, it was a joy to speak with you tonight. Thank you again so much. And to our listeners, thanks for joining us this evening. And a great day to everyone. And a great weekend. Good night.
Good night.